So far, we discussed kind of the classical formulation of gravity in this special first order form, which allowed us to get the kinematical phase space variables. And we also discussed that we have constraints which we need to impose at some point. And yesterday, we in particular discussed what to do with these constraints in quantum theory. For the example of this parameterized particle. So now we are slowly approaching our aim and actually doing really quantum gravity. And so, following this program of Dirac quantization, we would first have to find a quantum representation of our kinematical Hilbert space. And since the phase space is about geometric things, that gives you a theory of quantum geometry. And so we enter this field of quantum geometry in basically the rest of these lectures. And the first thing is, as I told you, the first step, we find a quantization of kinematical of this kinematical phase space and we determine this phase space to be something given by the pullback to the spatial slice of the connections, and these were fields and had also some internal index. And then we had these funny fluxes. And so these are also fields. And they satisfied a Poisson bracket. And so here you have to put all the Kronecker deltas, and you have a delta function. And so, as you know, quantization means that you take your things and would put funny hats over it. So, putting funny hats over it means actually that you would first find a Hilbert space and then find a Hilbert space where these are basically operators, and moreover, typically you want to have something like self-adjoint operators. And the important thing which you want to have is that actually the so-called Poisson algebra here is mapped into a commutator algebra for these operators, which usually summarized mapping Poisson brackets to commutators. Is some factor of I and H bar. We usually forget. So this would be something. And in fancy English, this should be an algebra homomorphisms. However, typically, actually, this is not possible. If you select all kind of phase space functions here, even in on L2R, so for the free particle, I mean, for this, it is not possible to map the algebra of all phase space functions consistently to this commutator algebra. And there's a theorem to this end called Grunewald-Van Hove. So in fact, what you typically get is a so-called deformation of this Poisson algebra. And this deformation, I mean, basically H acts as a deformation operator. So that wouldn't worry us too much. However, technically what it means is that what we actually have to do is to select a subalgebra a subalgebra of basic phase space functions. Which we actually are going to quantize, because in fact it's almost impossible to quantize all kinds of all possible phase space functions, especially if these would encounter like inverse operators. And this subalgebra should be, of course, sufficiently large to capture all information on your phase space. So that's called point separating, phase space point separating. Okay, and typically making different choices here can lead to different results. Because quantization in itself is not a unique procedure, because first you have to specify the procedure, but then it might depend on lots of classical input from this side. So that's one point where we should care about, which is the question, what could be the subalgebra of these basic phase space functions? And so we turn to our fields and would say, oh, we can take our fields evaluated at some spatial point. However, so if you consider quantum field theory, and then you might have seen in some lectures, you know, typically these things, something with a head over it, evaluated at a spatial point. And then for scalar field theory, you had these other things. And these things, however, are actually not operators, or are not proper operators. They are actually so-called operator value distributions. And so if you apply these operator value distributions to a state, you will typically not get a normalizable state. Distributions. And so the reason why this is the case is actually really in the Poisson algebra, which these things need to satisfy. And this is given by a delta function on the right-hand side. And so the delta function in itself is not a nice function, but is itself a so-called distribution. and so if you want to be slightly better defined, which is important because all the subtleties about quantum field theory actually indeed arise if you want to form products of these operator value distributions. And since they're distributions, this is even much more subtle than multiplying operators with each other. And so that basically all the regularization stuff is about to define multiplying the multiplication of these operators. If you want to be slightly more rigorous, what you usually do is to smear first phase space function or your which then is the same as smearing your operator value distributions And then you get actually something well-defined. And this is the same trick. The delta function is not so much defined as a function in itself, but it's defined as its action on another function. To give this value at f of x. So it's actually defined rather to live in some dual space on some nice space of functions. There are different choices of that, and one is these Schwarz temperate distributions. And so this means that the smearing functions are usually assumed to be very nice, like smooth and compact and so on. And so, in fact, one can define something like these smeared things. So where this would be phi integrated over x over your spacetime, and p would be the same. And in fact, this way, you of course avoid getting this delta function. Instead, what you get is an integral over f times g. G is a not a nice symbol here to take, as we will argue in a minute. So over f and f prime, a prime just stands for another function f. Dnx, so yeah. An n dimension that will give you just the integration. And so you can actually always count if you have an n dimensional integration here and n dimensional integration here. The Poisson brackets give you an n dimensional delta function. So you're left with an n dimensional integration. So this is fine. And so in fact, we could say, OK, we have to smear our fields. Our fields are, however, slightly more complicated because they have this index structure, and they are kind of one forms and so on. And there's another issue which we need to consider. And that's what one wants to have is an important thing, is that one usually wants to have a nice transformation property. With respect to the symmetries of your, especially the gauge symmetries of your system. And nice means that at some point we have to impose the constraints, and so we need to solve the constraints. And so nice means that it should be kind of doable to solve these constraints. And so one can actually, so the big achievement of kind of loop quantum gravity is that actually one can do that, in fact, with respect to the Gauss constraint. This is not a big achievement, but actually with respect to the spatial diffeomorphisms. And that's what has not been achieved before. And we will see why this is actually the case. and so in fact, it comes in really if you consider the spatial diffeomorphisms. And already if you go here, then you have to consider the following. If you want to define a nice algebra, then you want maybe these things to transform nicely under spatial diffeomorphisms at least. So in this case, phi is a scalar, and integrating it in this way over some region with this function f is fine, because that would just be some well-defined thing if f itself is a scalar. Now, pi, however, if you define it this way, pi is actually a so-called density. So that would mean that, or actually, sorry, it's the other way around. Phi is a scalar. But to integrate it, you would need to include a g here, and pi is the density, so you wouldn't need to include a square root of the determinant. However, if you include a square root here, it will show up here. And what we have, what this results in, is a complicated Poisson algebra in the first place, because you don't have only operators on the left-hand side, but you have also, in case that you actually quantize your matrix, a complicated operator on the right-hand side. So the other thing which we have, which one has to keep in mind, is to find observables which give you a simple Poisson algebra. And so what we will have to define is actually observables which give you indeed a simple and actually topological looking observable algebra. And that's a key point in the quantization of these systems. And it's also a key point why there are so many relations with topological field theories. And so in fact, one question would be, to avoid any need for integration on the right-hand side, because that would usually require something, a metric, if you don't end up with natural variables here. So how could we avoid integrating over the right-hand side? So in this example, what one does here is to integrate over three dimensions or over n dimensions here, and to integrate over n dimensions here. And so that's the reason why you end up with an integration again, because you just kill n dimensions in the Poisson brackets. So if you don't want to have that, what you could do is to decide, I could, for instance, make the following choice. I could still keep this integration, but I consider actually not smearing out these fields and representing them pointwise. That's actually a choice which you can do, which leads to something, you know, slightly unusual. It's related to so-called polymer quantization, and the fields really would exist now as operators. And the Poisson brackets would be just, actually, there would be no integration on the right-hand side. So you would just get something like a 1, or this value of f at the point where you're looking. And so it would just mean that if this region meets, if the point here is in this region or not. That's something topological. And you can maybe kind of guess, and it's hard to guess, but this would give you a kind of funny picture of space-time, because it's only this notion of distance which would tell you is a point in a given region or not. And so it wouldn't see any difference between one point is near this region and one point is very far away this region. And actually, that also comes due to diffeomorphism symmetry in a sense, because if your spatial diffeomorphism can at least change any distance of your auxiliary metric on your spacetime, which is just the coordinate space, the coordinate distance. So that is quite normal. So in our case, what we have is that we have a connection, which is a one form. And so what can you do nicely with one forms? there was some correct remark, I guess. So connections are actually one forms. Actually, and they cry for being integrated over one-dimensional objects. And in fact, you can integrate over one-dimensional objects without specifying any internal metric on this one-dimensional object. And it behaves nicely under diffeomorphisms. Moreover, connections, so it's, I mean, they're there to define parallel transport, which we'll do next in a minute. And these parallel transports are just kind of some maps associated to curves. So that's, again, something one-dimensional. So in fact, we would integrate one variable over one dimension. So So then, okay, if you don't want to have an integral here, what do we need to do with the other variable? I have something with my ears. So basically, so if your spatial dimension is d, it should be d minus 1. So if you are in 3 dimensions, then our spatial dimension is 2. So then it would be 1 dimension, and 4 dimension would be 2 dimension. And so in fact, the fluxes depends on your spacetime you are in. So that's what you integrated over. And what we have to do, so far the fluxes are these funny, actually are vector densities. But the vector density is nicely dual to an d minus 1 form in any dimension. So basically, there's this, a small dualization you have to apply. And if you do it actually in 2 plus 1, we got the fluxes by dualizing the triads. So we just go back to our co-triads, which have been 1 forms anyway. So we will also integrate these over 1-dimensional objects. And what we can expect, so basically, connections will be called holonomy. These are flux. And you know, basically, the next 2 lectures or something will be proving a nice relation, which is that we have a holonomy that's based on a curve, and we have a flux. You know, then we want this to be kind of a number. And so the number should probably just tell us whether this gives us a crossing or whether it doesn't give us a crossing. So it's something like not giving you a crossing, then you get 0. And of course, you can ask about all the other cases. And in fact, you can compute really all the other cases if you want. But in any case, the answer will be usually quite simple. And this is a basic case one is basically interested in. And it has this topological feature that it just counts, it just sees whether these curves cross or not. Yeah. So I should maybe stay here. The other thing about having these things on curves, again, I mean, one has to appreciate basically it will be only on these curves that you can excite your quantum field. So have kind of string-like excitations, not being in string theory. this has to be, you know, that's different than looking at the scalar field. I mean, in the standard field theory, again. But also, so you will have these slightly distributional excitations, because now the kind of they are just supported on these lines. But on the other hand, if you have this, it's easy to define an action, or it's easy. I mean, it's now you can define an action on the diffeomorphisms of the diffeomorphisms on this configuration, which actually just move around these lines. And that's the other reason why it's nice to have this structure. Okay. So basically, that explains you that we need to really define what is. What are actually these holonomies and what are these fluxes? And so it now comes a bit to this technical part that we need to go through to define what is a holonomy and what is a flux. And a holonomy is just there to realize the promise given you by the connection. So we had these color, we introduced these things with an internal index. So we had, we can introduce vectors or actually even higher dimensional things. But for the definition of holonomies, we just consider vectors with an internal index. And so what one actually wants to use, wants to have, is a notion of parallel transport. If I take a vector at a point, I want to define the notion of transporting it to another point. In a way that is as much kind of parallel to itself as possible. And so this notion is exactly what is inside a connection, because it connects different points. So in this context, parallel transporting vectors in Vj, we say this is something which runs from 1 to 3. And in fact, it's related to the rotation group. this internal vector had also this gauge symmetry that if you change the frame by rotation, we get a gauge transformation, which again is given you by applying rotation matrices to this vector. And so we need to cover some basic stuff about this rotation group and its so-called covering group, SU2. And I assume you have some basic information that actually SU2 is something like the universal cover of SU3. and in fact, what we are going to handle this is mostly SU2. Which is a choice, by the way. You could also reduce to SU3 as long as you don't discuss fermions. And we will need that because we actually are going to handle, to introduce so-called Lie algebra valued forms. And that just means that we kind of contract always this index with some abstract basis, which is this Lie algebra. So I assume you have seen these groups in general. Just to fix some notation, I'm now in SU2. So any group element can be parameterized in this way that you have a so-called angle, which actually is a so-called class angle, and a normal, which is normalized, so it lives on the two-sphere. And these other things, Tj, is what I use as generators for the Lie algebra. So this parameterizes SU2. And generators of the Lie algebra. And so they are given by some multiple of the Pauli matrices, three of them. And so as generators of the SU2 Lie algebra, they satisfy the commutation relation given by the SU2 algebra, which is this one and is the same as the SO3 algebra, because on the algebra level, they are the same algebras. Okay, so at some point later, I actually need to refer to this parametrization. And so what we have to remember is that there's this Inge alpha and this normal, which is parametrized by coordinates on the two-sphere. And then something that you have seen quite often is the notion of a joint representation, because that's how you usually introduce SU2. And that this is giving you actually, well, let's say that leads to the vector representation of SU3. And usually I've seen that if you introduce a Dirac equation, and so this thing means the following. So TL is a Lie algebra generators. So they can be the Lie algebra can be also identified with just the space R3, and this is the vector space underlying the vector representation of our rotation group. And so you can actually find this identity. One can actually check this identity explicitly, that for the rotation associated to an SU2 element G, and if you apply this rotation matrix to this generator, so you will basically get some linear combination of these generators. That is the same then doing the following. You multiply these SE2 elements, or you apply the adjoint action to these generators as matrices. So one should not be confused. So here we have really summation. So that just defines you the matrix multiplication, the multiplication with these indices. And this is really multiplication for the 2x2 matrices. And this is a 2x2 matrix, and this is a 2x2 matrix, because it was just given by Pauli matrices. And so you see this fact that SO3 is something like the quotient of SE2 divided by Z2. Because here, if you put G to be minus 1, which is an SU2 matrix, you just get still the trivial rotation. okay. And basically, all these, this formulation of gravity in terms of SU2, they basically come all of this fact that the vector representation of SU3, which we started with, because we started with these frames, is given by the joint representation of SU2. And so this is on the basis. So if you actually put it into components, it looks a bit, it looks the other way around. So we will introduce this notion of Lie algebra valued objects. So everything with an index, internal index, can be contracted with a Lie algebra basis. And what I get is something which is an object which is in fact a matrix, a 2 by 2 matrix. And so I can do that for my triads, for instance, and for the curvature and the connection. And so these will, if I omit the internal index, it will usually mean the thing without an index. Contracted, sorry. If I omit an index, it means usually it's contracted with the Lie algebra elements. And so, in fact, this is a 2 by 2 matrix. And so, under gauge transformation, it will transform in the adjoint representation. And that basically reproduces actually the rule we had at some point about how to transform, how the triads transform under rotations. And what we had also there was that that the connection is in fact not just a vector with respect to the rotations, but is a connection, which means it transforms as a connection. And so, in fact, if you write the stuff which we had there, for an infinitesimal transformation, so in this case it was in terms of lambda. Here it's for a finite transformation, which is called G. You will get this kind of formula, and this is a formula you will get in any for any connection in fiber bundles. Okay, so now this brings us rather to holonomies. So in fact, we will have some vector, which is Lie algebra valued sitting here, and some other object sitting here. And we want to specify this parallel transport. Along a curve, which can be an arbitrary, sufficiently smooth curve, and is usually parameterized by this parameter S. And so I want to define this notion of V of S, which is this V transported along this curve S. So that's at the point S. And V of S, it's a vector, so it should transform as a vector. Also with respect to this holonomy HS, so what a holonomy is basically a map now from this curve. So in this case, S to the, from the parameter S to the group. So it gives me group element H of S. And via this H of S, I can define my parallelly transported vector. Okay, and if you already from this information, you can at least deduce to have a gauge transformation, then under gauge transformation, the vector changes according to this rule. So the holonomy transports from one point to the other. So it would have to take in account the different gauge transformations at the different points. And so just from the transformation rule for V at the different points, you see if you that the holonomy transforms as follows. Under gauge transformations. So basically, you have to make a, you have to apply the inverse transformation at the initial point of your holonomy. And after you've gone, so you rotate backwards, after you've gone through it, you have to apply the rotation matrix itself. And basically, the reason that for this connection, for the holonomies, you have two different G's appearing. That's actually the reason that for the connection, you get this derivative term. So what we want to have is actually an expression for the holonomy in terms of the connection. And this holonomy should give us basically again the notion of parallel transporting the vector Vs, which should give us a sense of having a parallel rows of Vs. And the question is, of course, what does it mean? And of course, we expect that this notion of being parallel is connected to the covariant derivative, which we defined some time ago. And so the covariant derivative, you know, that was still this omega, so the omegas are now A's. Acting on a vector, if I write it in terms of the Lie algebra objects, so I get the partial derivative, and then there was a term with an epsilon, and so on. So there was an epsilon, an A, and a V. So remember, so this can be all summarized into a commutator term between the Lie algebra valued connection and the vector itself. So that's a notation you might see quite often in particle physics. And the commutator gives me this epsilon. So if you write that out in components, you find the previous expression. And so having a parallel transported vector means that if you look at this vector, in the direction of the curve you are transporting it, you want this change to be zero. And this is the same thing as you know from a geodesic equation, where here you wouldn't have a general vector v, but you would actually have the tangent itself. So this is what this thing has to satisfy, and conveniently we busily take here this derivative with respect to in the direction of the tangent vector of the curve, because we will define v as only in the direction only along the curve. So let's define this. So there's a partial derivative. This term. And so far, v0 in itself is basically just this vector at this point, v0. And I defined vs. And so the only thing which the partial derivative sees is actually the solonomies. And something like gamma dot A. Gamma dot dxa that will give me, in fact, just the derivative along the curve parameter d ds. So I get just two terms from the derivative of these various solonomies. So here it acts on the inverse solonomy. And then I have the other terms which come from the commutator. So v would be just v0. So here we have the derivative of the inverse, which you can always find from this trick, which I never remember. And so you find d ds h minus 1 is in fact h minus 1 d ds h minus 1. Okay, and so you have actually four terms, which appear in this term and this term and this term and this term with the same sign. And basically, as you can check, if you look at this first two terms, so this would cancel if with an A, if this derivative of the solonomy is given by this part, because the other terms are equal, minus g And luckily, if this is satisfied, also the other pair cancels automatically. So what we get is that we need to satisfy this equation. And it's just a differential equation. And we have an initial condition, of course, namely the holonomy at the point zero. And it should be just given by the identity. Okay. So it was not an intelligent choice of blackboards. So if you look at this differential equation, it looks like an equation which is very known to you. It's an equation which is basically saying derivative of something is equal to some proportionality factor times the same thing. So it would be just some exponential and basically there are some matrices. So it could be the exponential of these matrices. And the slight difficulty here is that actually the matrices might be non-commuting. For different s. So the problem, I mean, here the slight difficulty is that this is not a constant prefactor, but a varying one. So what you get actually is something which you have seen and comes up again and again, and that will be pass-ordered exponential in the end. And so in fact, you can kind of derive it step by step. If you integrate this equation once, and use the initial condition. So on the left-hand side, you integrate once, you get hs. And on the right-hand side, you get 1 minus this correction, which comes from the first term. Here's a dot. And so you integrate just over this right-hand side. Bracket by the root. So this would be the integral equation. Derived from the differential equation. So basically kind of the same information together with this initial condition. And now what you can imagine is that you iterate this kind of solution by putting h of s, the solution h of s again here. Put it there, and then you do it again and again. And what you get is this definition of a pass-ordered exponential, which you can invent your favorite notation for the pass-ordered exponential. And let's say that this basically connection integrated over gamma, but put into this exponential. And so you have a product of all these connections. And the product is always with these matrix valued connections. So order is important. And you start here from the right and go to the left with the so-called time ordering, with this ordering of this parameter. And so you can basically, again, you should have seen that in quantum mechanics, it's basically time perturbation theory with a time dependent perturbation. and you always get this kind of time ordered exponentials. And the thing is, so it's basically the usual kind of exponential formula that you get a power series over a to the power of n, which is here time ordered. However, we have the minus sign, okay, which comes from this minus sign. And what is missing is this 1 over n factorial. But this comes about because of this ordering of this integration thing, that you don't integrate over 0 to 1, but you only integrate over S2, which is the argument of this thing, and so on. So this gives you kind of this 1 over n factorial factor. OK, so that's the solution for the holonomy. And we actually will need it only again once, because basically what we will forget at some point is to forget about the connections and just work with the holonomies. And that will be our one set of basic variables, which we represent in our kinematical Hilbert space. And yeah, in this case, so for a long time, the representation, and it will be also a representation we will be using here. In fact, these holonomies will act as creation operators and annihilation operators in some sense. I mean, they're actually unitary, but will give you creation operators. And so if you there's a deep thing about quantum field theory, which is any representation, any Hilbert space can be basically understood as coming from a vacuum. So say technically any irreducible representation of a quantum algebra, which is defined on a given Hilbert space, can be understood as coming from a vacuum and applying operators to it. And so in fact, we will have a vacuum, which will be kind of a simple functional. And our creation operators will be these holonomies. And you can imagine what you get. We'll get basically states which live on graphs. And that will give you the spin network states. So basically, the holonomy is a basic input into this program, as you can see. And tomorrow, we will discuss the conjugated observables. It's a bit easier to discuss the fluxes. And what we have to figure out is actually indeed verify this picture. And once we have that, this algebra will be so nice that basically there's a kind of nice quantization of this Poisson algebra, of this algebra of commutators on some very nice Hilbert space. And so we will get our kinematical Hilbert space easily after having done this work. OK. See you tomorrow.